This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Are you thinking about buying a new car, maybe, or even applying for a new job? Well, your credit score just might decide whether you do both of those things and a whole lot more in addition. A new report says Georgia tops the list for worst credit in the country. That's according to the website cardratings.com. So here to talk more about this are financial planners Cecily Welch and Emma Folks. Hello, Cecily.
Hello, Celeste. Thank you for having me.
And hello, Emma.
Good morning.
Good morning. So first, there's two sides that may be surprising to people, Emma, right? There's the side of they may be surprised by what affects their credit score.
Yes.
So can we start there about the things that may be sort of a really unpleasant surprise for people?
A really unpleasant surprise could be people who have no credit, people who have always heard that credit card debt is bad and have been taught to avoid it. And so they've avoided it and they have never applied for a credit card. They have paid for cash for everything. And then they go to make a big purchase like a house or start a business. And they realize that having no credit is almost as bad as having horrible credit.
And Cecily, how often people will go years without checking their credit score? They'll wait until they're trying to buy a house, right? So how often should you be checking it? In other words, how quickly can it change?
Well, credit scores change more quickly than people expect, meaning they change probably every 2 to 3 months. People think that they only change once or twice a year.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by they change more quickly than one expects. And people have assumptions about what impacts their credit scores instead of finding out factually what really does.
People think that if they check their credit score, it'll bring your credit score down.
That is correct when it is a hard credit check. So that is if something like a bank or a credit card company pulls your credit. But people hear that sentence and they just extrapolate it to mean everything and all the time.
Right. Okay, so then let's get specific about Georgia, on the other hand, and why our credit scores are so low, because we have Fortune 500 companies here. We have people making lots of money. Why would we have, on average, such low credit?
That is a great question, and we can go in so many different directions with the response. And, you know, I think, you know, the narrative in our country is to say that the people, the reason why we have high credit card debt is because people are inherently irresponsible. I work with people, I talk to people, we work with some of the same types of people, and I don't think that's the case. I think this all comes down to income and the lack of income growth. And I think Cecily has mentioned before of where we stand in Georgia as far as wage growth.
So let's dig into this just a little bit, because you may not be making a lot of money, but you don't. That doesn't mean you have to spend on credit cards, right, Cecily?
Oh, I would disagree with you, Celeste. There are expenses that have no relation to your income. So whether or not I make $50,000 a year or $150,000 a year, my health care cost is the same. And it's currently over $18,000 a year.
And medical expenses are still the number one cause of bankruptcy.
Exactly. Then that's with people who even have insurance. So that $18,000 is the cost of insurance. That's not even using it yet. That's just causing the premiums. Child care costs are also fixed costs and are not related to the income you make. Whether you make 50 or whether you make 150, it also is the cost. So when we're in a situation where there's been stagnant wage growth, we haven't had wage growth in over 20 years, but other expenses.
Wait, we haven't had wage growth in 2 decades?
Correct. We have not had any real wage growth in over 2 decades. But our costs are not just increasing over inflation, but are increasing double and triple that. Education cost, health care cost, child care cost. Housing, I think, isn't double digits, but it's still more than inflation. All those costs have increased, but our wages have not.
And if we want to take it even a step further, when a person, like during the recession, people were making a nice salary, let's say you were making, let's just call it $100,000 base salary, and you were getting $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 as a bonus, and those bonuses go away, what do? Your lifestyle is at $130,000 a year, and now you have to make do overnight with $30,000 less.
Yeah, and certainly lots of people are making way less money than
and
that.
And lifestyle changes can't happen overnight. So
right, exactly. If you've signed leases or whatever it may be. Let me play for you a couple comments, because we went out, we took it to the streets and talked to some people about their issues with credit. Here's Robert Lario. He talks about how he thinks credit scores can impact his job.
My name's Robert Lario. I live in Atlantic Station. The only things that I'm aware of that would can be affected by your credit score would be possibly employment. And then, of course, getting any kind of loan. I just recently, I'm transitioning to a new job, and I recall signing something giving them authorization to check my credit score.
So he says the only two things that he's aware of a credit score affecting are employment and loans. But Emma, your credit score affects more than that. I mean, how many places can you be impacted by your credit score?
And
how much time do we have?
Almost everywhere, even insurances. I mean, there's so many things that are impacted by your credit score. And, you know, I go back to, if it's such an important thing, why aren't we taught about it in high school? Why do we have to wait till after college? I call, you know, our 20s, our terrible 20s, you know, why do you have to wait till you're in your terrible 20s to figure out that, you know, your credit score is very important and it will impact everything that you do in life going forward?
Well, you know, Emma, I think that part of why we're not taught that is that the world has changed significantly. Back in our day, I won't say how old we are, but credit score did not impact all those different things. This is why I think we need to look at systemic issues and talk to our legislatures, because laws have been changed that now allow credit score to impact things that it did not used to impact. Okay. Your credit score didn't matter with insurance.
So
before.
Here's somebody else that we talked to mentioning one of those things. This is Todd Swenken.
I definitely know my credit score. I check it about every 6 months. Ever since the recession, I've been trying to rebuild that. It affects my ability if I wanted to purchase a home. Anything you rent now, they always ask for your credit score. So it affects a lot of things. And I'm old enough now to know that it's very important to keep that above a certain level.
So a lot of landlords, even if you're renting and not buying a home, actually will check your credit score also.
Absolutely. Your car insurance is impacted by your credit score.
Which doesn't make any sense to me.
But being devil's advocate, it does. The theory of credit, when we look at it, is how responsible are you? Okay.
Right.
So if you have a good credit score, you are responsible with paying bills. It means that may transcend into other things. What the credit score doesn't take into consideration is life. Things happen. The recession happened. Job loss happens.
Yeah, that may have nothing to do with
that. may have nothing to do with how responsible you are. So in theory, it's a great theory. Yes, you're responsible. You can pay your bills, which means you won't get on the road and speed and wrap your car around a tree. But that's not reality.
Especially here in Georgia, because sometimes people hit you.
Or highways collapse.
Yeah, exactly. Or there's sinkholes in the middle of the street. If you're just joining us, we're talking about credit scores, because a new report says Georgia has the worst credit ratings in the country. That's affected by foreclosures, unemployment, bankruptcy, your medical bills. And if your credit score has affected more than just your ability to get your loans, we want to hear about it. You can tweet us at OST Talk, find us on Facebook, or give us a call. I'm speaking with Cecily Welch and Emma Folks, both financial planners here in Atlanta. All right, let's hear one more comment. This is Rory Putnam in Atlanta, and he's talking about what he thinks is a good score.
I'm actually in the process of looking for a home, so that's one good reason to check your credit and keep your score in good standings. I would say anything probably 700 and above, in my personal opinion. If you could definitely, the higher the better, obviously, but I know you can get credit with lower than a 700, depending on what you're trying to get credit for, so yeah.
Okay, so Emma, is he right? Is a good credit score 700 and above?
I don't know. And I'm being facetious. I believe it's 720, but it depends on what you read. There's three different credit bureaus,
right,
and they play by different sets of rules. And then there's the FICO score. It is purposely confusing.
Purposely confusing. What does that mean?
Purposely confusing, meaning if we could go online and type in what is a good credit score and we get the same score from our Google search, then we know that is actual. But the government or Washington allows the credit bureaus to just kind of do things at their whim. You know, you've got, why do we have three different scores? Why does, you know, TransUnion score one way, Equifax score one way, Experian score another way? So I really don't know. But I've been taught that 720 means you have good. Great credit. Yeah. Right. But I've also heard that above 680 is you know, average.
And it depends on what you're going to be applying for and what you're going to use it for. Because it is gray and very malleable, banks, credit card companies, insurance agencies like to have some sort of subjective criteria, not just objective criteria, which is why it's so gray and we never know exactly what the number is, and because they want to be able to make the decision not just on the number but on other things. To me, that's a commercial for dealing with a person instead of doing everything online. Online information is great. It pulls up information, it gives you some data, but when you have someone to talk to, they can say, this is a great score, but if you also have A, B, C, D, and E, it all will offset, or they'll give you some hints on how to flow through the system that isn't a perfect numerically designed system.
We have a tweet from Joel Cook who says, I have credit card debt because I was irresponsible. Am I the only one willing to admit that? I bet you're not, Joel. But I will say, let's bring one other factor that is specific to Georgia into this, and that is that Georgia has the highest, among the highest, if not the highest ratio of student loan debt in the country. Emma, how much does student loan debt, and I've read that one of the things that really kills some of these young people's credit is that their debt in student loans so far outpaces their earnings.
You know, I haven't been able to get a definitive answer on that yet. There's good credit to have, and then there's, you know, bad credit, the consumer credit. And good credit is something like a home, a mortgage, because, you know, that's an asset that should appreciate. Student loan debt should be good credit or good debt to have, because that's making an investment into you, which will should increase your income earning potential. I was taught that student loan debt should not impact your mortgage. But as I've been talking to as I've been talking to mortgage people, they've been giving me the ratios. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what are these young people going to do? Because the amount of student loan debt that they have compared to what they're earning is.
This, again, is an opportunity for educating. All student debt isn't appropriate. There should be some sort of conversations and counseling from the schools when college students go to school to talk about, is the debt you're about to acquire in proportion, and does it make sense to what you believe you're going to be doing later? No one knows for sure, but if I'm planning on being a teacher, I do not need to go to school and get $200,000 worth of debt.
Absolutely. And we do need to, you know, there's a whole process that I go through with young people to make sure that what they're looking at majoring in and the amount of debt that they're looking at taking will translate into what they're going to be mm-hmm. doing when they're older. But you have to understand, many of us grew up middle class. Right. We're very confused. We watched our parents save money. They always had money. We watched them pay for our private school, our extracurricular activities. They took us on decent vacations. You know, so we get it. They didn't use a whole lot of credit cards. Right. Why is it that we're struggling? You know, if you're making $100,000, $150,000,
you're going to start talking about wages, aren't you? Again?
No, I'm just wondering. I mean, that's what's leading us back to using credit cards.
So let's read a couple more tweets. Ted Barfield says, it's not an either or, and it's usually both. Lack of responsibility often leads to bad decisions and not enough income and reliance on credit. And Just a Guy says, good time to tell people about credit freeze, especially for kids. And then one more thing, Emma can't wait to talk about credit freeze, Just a Guy. But we have also probably one of the most important questions, which is Chad Alexander, who says, what is the best way to rebuild your credit? So, Emma, if you want to talk about credit freeze first, and then we'll answer this question about rebuilding.
Well, credit freeze is, I love it. Excuse me. It is a way you go on all three of the credit bureaus. And if you have children, I would do it. You know, parents, if your parents are, you know, older in age, definitely do this. You go on the three credit bureaus websites and you freeze your credit. That way, if somebody gets a hold of your social security number and sensitive information, they cannot apply for credit in your name. And then when you want to buy a house or a car, you unfreeze your credit for, say, 30 days. It gives you a time frame and it costs $3. So for all three of them, it's $9, but your credit is frozen.
And you have to do that at all three websites, or is there a central
hub? No central hub, because they all act independently.
Yeah, of course.
Come
they
on,
do.
That's too easy.
I know. Cecily, can we answer Chad's question about let's say you're down at 600. Now what?
So to rebuild your credit, the first thing I would say is you cannot monitor, you cannot control what you do not track. So create a process where on a weekly basis or biweekly basis, you are checking and looking and keep a spreadsheet that shows what my number is each time. Also within that spreadsheet, know what the different levers are. It's credit utilization, how many cards, length of credit history. Figure out which lever we're going to touch first. Because it can be very overwhelming to just say I need to fix my credit, and then you realize there are 12 things that I need to do.
When so you look, start with one. Now, do you start with the biggest one or the hardest one, the biggest debt, or do you start with the smallest?
It's a personality question, a money personality question. Some of my clients, it works better for them to achieve a goal quickly, so we go for the smallest thing first. So they feel like they've accomplished something. Other people, that doesn't feel impactful for them. So if the less disciplined they are, the smaller the goal I start with to answer your question.
So no, don't start with the $50,000 student loan debt.
It's usually too overwhelming.
And the reward is too long. But Emma, we have 30 seconds left. Do you want to add to that on how to rebuild credit?
Well, one of the things when people are rebuilding, in order to not get into trouble, I just say put money aside. You can start paying debt down. You can do a lot of things, but you have to have savings. You have to have
pay
emergency
first,
money.
Right?
Yeah, well, yes, from the standpoint of emergency money, so that if something does happen, you're not going back into credit card debt.
Right. Life happens.
Life will always happen.
There's no expectation of perfection. I think that would help people. So I have got many initials after my name, and I tell people, look, I've bounced a check. It's okay. The fact is to move forward, do something. Don't be paralyzed because you're worried you're going to do something wrong.
That is Cecily Welch with good advice, a financial planner from Welch Financial Planners, and Emma Folks of Folks and Steele Wealth Management. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, the unsavory side of barbecue. This is On Second Thought.
What y'all wanna do? Wanna be ballin'?